Don't you guys love Olam Worship? I just love those folks. And they're going to be leading our worship time at Sugarland Bible Church. Not that I'm advertising anything. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. So we're looking forward to that. Well, our speaker, I don't think, needs an introduction. Olivier Melnick is going to be doing the Lazarus session, as I like to call it, the session right after lunch. And, you know, I think it was maybe a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, he was with another ministry, and he just kind of felt the leading of the Lord to step away from that, a good ministry, and kind of branch off in his own direction. And when I at the time heard about that, I was encouraged, because I think Olivier has a unique message. He's a unique individual, and he needs kind of his freedom and his independence. And of course, when someone, you know, steps away from a mothership and branches out on their own, the big concern is, you know, what about resources? What about finances? So I said, well, why don't we just trust the Lord on this? And I think the Lord has come through for him. The body of Christ has gotten behind him. And I encourage people to check out his ministry. If you like what you hear, then consider, you know, being a supporter of his. His ministry is called Shalom in Messiah. And you can see the kinds of things that he is advocating at this conference, exposing anti-Semitism. He's really, in my opinion, become one of the world's leading authorities on this subject. In fact, he has a brand new book that just got published via Harvest House. And the title of it is Anti-Semitism in the End Times. He may have a few left on his book table, but if they're all gone, it's available on Amazon. So let's welcome again my friend Olivier Melnick.
Thank you. Shalom, everybody. Good to be back. Good to be back. This has been such a great conference. This has been amazing, amazing conference. We're on the screen, good. You know, I'm still digesting the last session, and well, all the sessions really, they're all good. But I remember Andy was talking about AI, and you know, he's using an AI engine to generate answers from his library of teaching, and I recommend it. It's great. And really, AI, which is, this is not part of my message today, but I wanted to share this. AI is just a tool. It can be used for good and for bad. How many of you, raise your hand, knew that Andy played basketball when he was younger? How many of you knew that he could jump higher than Michael Jordan? The guy is multi-talented. So, this photo is for sale for $500. No, anyway, I had to have a little fun. And, all right, so let's get serious here. Thank you again for giving me a second opportunity to share with you what the Lord has put on our heart at Shalom and Messiah. By the way, I'm not alone here. I came here, I'm going to embarrass him because he doesn't like this, but I came here with my VP of operation, who does so much behind the scenes so that I can do what I do. It's his name is Doug Gilmore. Doug, stand for a second so the people know who you are. And so, if you have any questions, just ask him. Don't ask me. So our website is shalominmessiah.com. This is where you can go to connect with us, to ask for the, you know, be on a newsletter, my daily devotional on video on YouTube. I can send you that in your email. I do it every day of the week. Some of you probably already signed up last time. And if you can support support us. There's a donate button, and we do need, you know, we go, yeah, we are faith ministry, so we appreciate the donations. ShalomAndMessiah.com. Let me repeat the, you know, you see it on the screen. Expose and fight anti-Semitism. Equip and mobilize Christians. Lead Jewish people to the Messiah. I told you yesterday about the books. I'm not going to say it again. Andy already talked about this book, End Times. We have some left on the back table. They're also available on Amazon. And the more we get to be purchased on Amazon, the quicker it gets to be a number one bestseller, and then we get a lot of exposure. It's not for the money, honestly. It's just like I want people to get the message. So whatever you can do to help. The notes, of course, here they are. That's the notes for today. It's different from yesterday. So if you want to follow with me on your phone, instead of taking pictures and missing what I'm saying next, get this, because it will be on your iPad, on your phone, and your computer. If you miss it right now, come back, see me at the table or anytime throughout the afternoon. I can give you the barcode and you can get them again. There will be another barcode at the end that will be different, and that will be very important. They'll be different. The barcode, that the QR code at the end, in case I forget to tell you, is a repeat, slightly different as far as the way we track them, but it's a repeat of yesterday. So if you signed up yesterday to make a difference, don't do it again today, because you'll be twice on our mailing list receiving a packet that we send for free, and it makes things a little complicated. So, but if you did not sign up yesterday, please sign up today. You'll find out why you need to by the time I'm done. So today, what I want to talk about, there was a quote. So today, the topic is conversion, expulsion, destruction, the lethal progression. You remember, if you were here yesterday, this quote that I read to you from Raoul Hilberg, The Destruction of European Jews, 1961. The missionaries of Christianity had said, in effect, you have no right to live among us as Jews. The secular rulers who followed had proclaimed, you have no right to live among us. The German Nazis at last decreed, you have no right to live. This is conversion, expulsion, destruction. And I believe that we are at a time right now in our history, at the Western civilization, where a similar pattern is developing, clearly developing right now, following the same logic in a different way, but even more lethal. And this is the part that I want you to really grab hold of right now, is that this is really developing in a way that's going to get worse. But this is probably the best opportunity we as believers have to make a difference for the kingdom that's coming, not that's here. Okay, I just want to reiterate that to make a difference for the kingdom, and to see more Jewish people meet their Messiah. Wouldn't you love that? I mean, this is Genesis 12:3 in action. So it looks bad, but there's so much we can do. We have an incredible opportunity. This will all make sense as this develops. I am reminded when I see this irrationality of anti-Semitism of the Book of Esther. I will, by the way, if you're on the fence about coming tomorrow to Sugar Land, please come, because it's going to be an incredible morning. And I will be teaching in Sunday school about the Feast of Esther, Purim, and make some parallels as well. So from the Book of Esther, I want to quote a few verses. Then Haman saw that Mordecai was not bowing down or prostrating himself before him. So Haman was filled with wrath, but he despised in his eyes to send forth his hand against Mordecai alone, for they had told him who the people of Mordecai were. Therefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered and separated among the peoples in all the provinces of all your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of all the other people, and they do not do the king's law. So it's not worth it for the king to let them remain. So Haman, again, I will develop that tomorrow, so I don't want to spend too much time. Haman basically was mad at one Jew, Mordecai, and he thought, I'm just going to get rid of all the Jews. And what he was trying to sell to his king is like, they're different. They don't fit. It's true, we're different, okay? I mean, you look at the Jewish people over history, and by the way, we exist by God's grace, and it is a miracle that we still exist. But the Jewish people have always been different, you try to use that, you try to finance the destruction of the Jews, and And here we are at a crossroads right now where things are developing so quickly. Are we running the risk of history repeating itself? Yes, it is repeating itself in a different way, but it is repeating itself. Before we go into what's happening now, I want to give you a brief overview, as brief as we can make it in the time that we have. I want to make it quick. I want to give you a historical background so we can compare the conversion, expulsion, destruction of yesterday to the one that's happening today. So going back in history, missionaries of Christianity had said, you have no right to live among us as Jews. We're looking at conversion. From the early church fathers forward, Christians have tried to convert Jews. And I don't like the term convert. Jews do not convert. We find our Messiah. We come to salvation. We come to a saving knowledge of the Messiah. I don't even like the word complete, because what part of me was not complete before I found Jesus? It sounds weird. I just found the Messiah. 42 years ago, almost 43, I found my Messiah. His name is Yeshua, Jesus. And he gave me the free gift of salvation. I believe that he's my Messiah. He died for my sins. And that was it for me. Almost 43 years ago. But this word conversion has led, Christians throughout the ages, to do forced conversions, forced baptism. And by the way, I speak a lot in a lot more details about all of this, that foundation, the historical foundation in the book that, Andy mentioned, Antisemitism in the End Times. You really want to get a copy of that. A medieval disputation when Jews and Christians would argue theologically about who was right, and then if the party that would the party that would lose would be expelled, and of course, guess who was always losing? The Jews, and the Catholic Church was pushing them away. Anti-Jewish laws were written that are, some of them are still at the foundation of the legal system today as we know it, the Theodician Code and the Justinian Code. And these codes were made to serve the church more than anything. They were not made to really help the Jewish community at all. In a few exceptions maybe, but when you look at them, there are things like Jews who conduct themselves peacefully are not to be molested. Well, that's nice. I mean, that's part of the Justinian law. So, or Theodician, CT is Codex Theodicianus. Theodician law, those are the numbers if you want to find it. Jews who conduct themselves peacefully, of course, peacefully, it's all in the eye of the beholder. What does it mean to be peaceful? It would vary from day to day. If they're not deemed peaceful enough, they can be molested. This is what we had to go through. The law would forbid Christians to convert to Judaism. Back in the days, it was a thing. Not that I recommend it, but it was a thing. And so, also Jews are barred from public function and public office. Eventually, Jews were, they could not own a property. That was one of the big reasons why Jewish people, outside of the fact that we love to learn and we're really good at learning and reading, and the Jewish people became doctors and lawyers, not because there's more money in it, but because this is a knowledge you can take with you when you're expelled from one country to the next. It does not rely on property or building or fields or anything or animals. It's just like in the head. You kick me out of France, I'll go practice in Portugal. Kick me out of Portugal, I'll go practice in Italy, and on and on and on. So that's one reason why. Marriage to Jews carried the death penalty for Christians, and there's a lot more. So this conversion thing was a big thing in the early stages of the Middle Ages, trying to convert, to change the Jews to make them fit. When that, after a while, that didn't work, well then, if we can make them fit, let's get rid of them. So the secular rulers followed and proclaimed, you have no right to live among us as Jews. Let's make you into something else. We can't, so let's get you out. You can't live with us anymore. And you look at a map here of all the different expulsions with the dates. That's a lot of expulsions from Europe. And I even put some on the side here. Greece, Switzerland, Bavaria, Yemen, Caribbean, Russia. There's a lot more that are not even on that. That's the best map I could find. And I'm just lazy. I didn't want to draw another one. So just put the words there. But Jews have been expelled out of more countries over the centuries than any people group in the history of mankind. As a matter of fact, 1,300 times in the entire history. And expulsions often left Jewish communities no time to organize or gather property prior to departure. A really, really good example of that is 1492. When you hear 1492, what do you hear? What is Columbus sailed the ocean blue. But more happened on that year than just that. Okay? The expulsion of the Jews from Spain. Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand said, we don't want the Jews anymore. So they kicked out all the Jews. And they said, by the way, leave your stuff behind. We can use your property. So, a lot of time they didn't have chance to gather anything. They would have to leave with nothing. Reasons varied. And in many cases, Jews would be expelled multiple times from the same countries. They would come back and then leave again, come back and leave again. So conversions didn't work. Expulsions didn't work. We cannot change them. We just cannot push them outside, get rid of them. They keep coming back. That's what the enemies of the Jews think. Well, we only have one more option. Destruction. That's the lethal progression. The German Nazis at last decreed, you have no right to live among us as Jews. Let's talk for a minute about the Holocaust. I don't want to spend too much time on it, because this is part of the historical foundation. I want to move on to, you know, what's happening today. The Holocaust was responsible for the death of 12 million people. Recently, the BBC and somebody else important in the government, I don't know if it was J.D. Vance, maybe it was, but they claimed that on January 27th, they said this is a International Holocaust Memorial Day, and both the BBC, to be expected, and this other person, not to be expected, I think it was Vice President, said that, during the Holocaust, 6 million people died. No, that is inaccurate. 6 million Jews died. 12 million people, generally speaking, died. Correct. 6 million Jews died. 1.5 million out of those 6 million children. That's accurate. That's not what was said. It's, you know, whitewashing and then changing the narrative, and that's wrong. The Holocaust was a systematic and unique attempt by the Nazis at destroying European Jewry. Why was it unique? Think about it. The Holocaust, look at this map. The Holocaust was the only genocide when the perpetrators went out of their way to bring victims who had escaped back to them for destruction. You could not escape in those years. I mean, a few people did, but basically, the Nazis would get the Jews back on the train and bring them back. Any other genocide in the history of mankind, you can get out, and go be a refugee in another country. Good riddance, they say. For the Jews, that option did not exist. My grandfather was taken from the home where my mother grew up, where I grew up, on the outskirts of Paris. And within a week and a half, he was murdered in Auschwitz. He was one of them. So that's the historical background here conversion, expulsion, destruction. History repeating itself. Conversion, expulsion, destruction, the lethal progression. How is it repeating itself? Not exactly the same, but track with me. New conversion. Jews are no longer being forced to convert to Christianity. Jews are converting to liberalism. That's a big shift here. They're converting to liberalism. Ruth Weiss said recently, I was watching this webinar that she was doing. Great teacher, by the way, great historian. Jews are associated with liberalism the way the French are with wine. It is considered native to their religion. Hey, I'm from France, so, you know, I take offense. No, I'm just, I surrender. So there is this liberalism, there is this, it is, I believe, a new religion for Jews right now. This is the way it's going. Here is a reality that we need to understand. Throughout our history, all across Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, our religion was a stigma that defined us as the them and the us and them. The us was the Christians and the them was the Jews. We were always on the outskirts of the community, sometimes by choice in self-imposed ghettos where we lived as Jewish communities, very often not by choice. In the late 1800s, America was known in Yiddish as the Goldene Medina, the golden country, the place where you had a great future. So Jews could emigrate to America and truly become citizens, something that we couldn't do just about anywhere else in the world, regardless of our belief in God or no belief or whatever. Come to America, become an American citizen. That was very, very, it was encouraging to the Jewish community at the time. That was before the Holocaust, but there were, you know, remember 1896 was the Dreyfus Affair, where Theodor Herzl came from Austria, looked at what's going on at the Dreyfus Affair, going like, you know what? The Enlightenment is not working for the Jews. It's working for everybody else, not for the Jews. They don't have a, hope. And he wrote the Jewish state, the Judenstaat, in 1897, and he said, in 5 years or 50 years, pay attention, it's not in the notes, in 5 years or 50 years, we will be in our own land. And it was, you know, that was very interesting that what he was saying, because in 1947, the UN voted for the partition of, quote, unquote, back then, Palestine. Don't get me started. The Jews in the late 1800s thought like, hey, you know what, we have a future in America. Ed Shapiro, my Jewish learning, said this: since the parties of the left in Europe in the 19th and 20th century favored Jewish emancipation and opposed anti-Semitism, Jews naturally supported the political left. Back then it made sense. And distrusted the political establishment, which was often anti-Semitic. Back then, it made sense. Now, of course, now the left has gone after the Jews, and recently, as we've seen, the woke right, or like some other people in our circles call it, the woke Reich, if you get my drift. Liberalism is mostly embraced by secular Jews. If you look at Orthodox Jewish people today, they will mostly vote Republican and conservative, but they're only 12%, up to maybe 15% of the Jewish community. So it's not a big a big group within the Jewish community and within people in general. 2009 Hudson Institute: most American Jews sincerely believe that their liberalism, together with their commitment to the Democratic Party as its main political vehicle, stems from the teachings of Judaism and reflects the heritage of Jewish values. It has, for all practical purposes, superseded Judaism and become a religion in its own. Liberalism is the new Jewish religion, except for the Orthodox. Jewish people today are perfectly fine. The liberal Jews today are perfectly fine being Jewish. They have zero or very little connection to Israel. So whatever happens in Israel, it's not really their concern. It is their concern as long as it fits the narrative of social justice, which has to include the poor Palestinian and all the baggage that comes with that narrative, which of course is not grounded in historical truth. And that's the problem. But to Jewish people, in America especially, it's not an issue. I mean, we see it. People ask me all the time, why do Jews vote liberal? Why did 20% of the Jews vote for Zoran Mamdani? Because they don't care about Israel. That's not what it means to them to be Jewish anymore. This has shifted. It's a dangerous, slippery slope. They're still Jews, though. And here's the big thing. Liberal, conservative, anything in between, they need Jesus. Absolutely need Jesus. That's the same Yeshua, same Jesus for all people. So new conversion, new expulsion. The birth of the State of Israel in 1948 was a historic and prophetic event. Really was. I don't believe it's really spoken of specifically in the Bible, but it is an absolute prerequisite for things to have happened after 1948 up to today, and for the maybe not so distant future. So it was prophetic in that sense. It started an overnight campaign to delegitimize Israel and expel all Jews from the land. As you've seen in, 1948, 1967, 1973, 1982, 2000, all those wars, up to the one that they're still fighting right now. I talked to some of our assets with our ministry in Israel as late as yesterday, and they're in Gaza. They're back in Gaza. Hamas has not given up, and now with Iran, who knows when it's going to go off, but it's, you know, it's going to happen. So we're not done. Jews are no longer just being expelled from the diaspora, but now also from their own biblical and historical land. Israel is not a big place. You know that. You've heard it how many times? It's the size of... See? Yeah. You knew it already. The new euphemism, you heard that yesterday, for getting rid of all Jews from the river to the sea, Palestine shall be free. That's the new euphemism. Most people don't know what they're talking about, but that's the, let's get rid of the Jews. The entire country must be Judenrein, free of Jews. German word from the Holocaust. Reasons given for expulsion: colonization, occupation, genocide, apartheid, the Khazars. I have videos on our website at Shalom and Messiah on YouTube on all those things. So go there, visit, subscribe, and share those videos. A big one is colonization. We, the Jews, have colonized Palestine. There's a, this is the half point in my presentation. I always have to come up with something funny, right? So you're going like, when is he going to come up with something? It's coming. Okay? There's a Israeli comedian. His name is Yohei Sponder. Anybody know who Yohei Sponder is? I can't see the hands because those lights are so bright. But Yohei Sponder has a show in Tel Aviv. I think it's once a week in English. And I haven't caught the show yet because it's always like, you know, we travel, we do ministry, but one day I'm going to go. He's on YouTube. Just a word of warning. Sometimes he uses foul language. So I, you know, this one's clean, I promise you. But this is pretty funny. He's talking about colonization. Okay, so here we go.
Because you never open the map. No one can call me a colonizer if he saw my country on the map. That's enough to understand how dumb you are. You need to zoom in 17 times just to see the country. And then 17 more times just to see the name of the country that, by the way, don't fit in the country. We are the only country in the world that we don't have enough country for the name of the country. It starts in the sea and ends in the river. We are the only country that we don't... And we surround the 57 Muslim countries, not included Europe.
There is more, but he's very funny. And all of his bits are usually about terrorism, and it's pretty good. Anyway, so yeah, the you know, very small country. But the globalized intifada is another one. It's a reason to go after Jews anywhere in the world. We are told that we don't belong in the diaspora or in Israel. You know, I've heard it from different people recently. People will accept us as Jews as long as we're homeless. Think about it. They'll say, oh yeah, you can be Jewish as long as you're homeless. Well, where do we go? I don't care. Certainly not in Israel, and you can't stay here. That's where it's going right now. And I just want the truth to sink in once and for all. From the sea to the river, Israel is forever. Amen? And that is based, those are not my words. Well, I wrote this, but those are not based on what I want. This is based on Jeremiah 31, 35 to 37. Thus says Yahweh, who gives the sun for light by day and the statutes for the moon and the stars for light by night, who stirs up the sea so that its waves roar. Yahweh of hosts is his name. If these statutes are removed from before me, declares Yahweh, then the seed of Israel will also cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus says Yahweh, if the heavens above can be measured and the foundation of the earth searched out below, then I will also reject all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, declares Yahweh. So this is God's way of saying, I'm not forsaking Israel. And he has not, and he will not. Do you believe that?
Yes.
I hope so, because this is the word of God. There's no mistake there. And you know what? Really, what I really like about this is the very end of the verse, because it reminds us when God says, for all that they have done, declares the Lord, it reminds us that whatever God has promised based on the Abrahamic covenant is not based on our performance. We haven't done too well. If you look at the, you know, if I can recommend a really good book to look at all the sins of Israel, it's called the Bible. And so we haven't done too good, but The Abrahamic covenant promises unconditionally, unilaterally, and eternally that God is going to bless Israel and bless those who bless Israel. And he's saying, you know, I will do this in spite of all that they have done to me. What does that mean? It's based on God's character, not our performance. I am so grateful for that. It's huge. It's huge. New destruction. We have entered a new era where Jewish people fear for their lives. This is where we come into the picture, my friends. This is where it's the rubber is about to meet the road right now. On October 7th, you've heard me say that yesterday, October 7th, 2023, and against all odds, Pandora's box of end times anti-Semitism was open. It will not be closed back until Yeshua's return. I know it sounds very, very dark, very doom and gloom, very negative. And had you asked me 3 years ago, maybe even at one of these conferences, I would have not said that same sentence. But we have moved forward. We have reached the point of no return. I'm convinced of it. I can't keep up. I get so many emails every day on what's happening, and I have to select what I'm going to write on, what I'm going to report. I cannot keep up. But Christians can and should help to minimize the damage. Like I said yesterday, we need to expose, we need to oppose, and eventually you'll come back and depose. But until he comes to depose, we need to expose and oppose. That is our job. And in the process of all that, there's things that we can do, and I'm about to share. But frankly, Pandora's box is open. Genocide, global intifada, BDS, blood libel, occupation, apartheid, river to the sea, on and on and on. It's coming out. And it's coming out from places that you would have never thought. It's coming out from the right, from the left, from radical Islam, from Hollywood, from secular, from academia, from everywhere. Right now it's coming from everywhere. And a fear of mine is that the next level is what we can call state-sponsored anti-Semitism. When anti-Semitism comes out of government and is not being challenged. Something happened a couple of days ago. You might have caught it. Carrie Prejean-Boller spoke at the White House Religious Liberty Commission, and her diatribe against Israel was a shameful and dangerous display of state-sponsored anti-Semitism. She was let go. She was fired. It ended in, it was the proper ending to that story. But what she said,
of tens of thousands of Palestinian civilians in Gaza and their university's financial ties to that war. So I need to ask you, in a country built on religious liberty and the First Amendment, do you believe someone can stand firmly against anti-Semitism, including what you experienced, and at the same time condemn the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza, or reject political Zionism, or not support the political state of Israel? Or do you believe that speaking out about what many Americans view as genocide in Gaza should be treated as anti-Semitic? Because in my view, the United States cannot and must not make loyalty to a particular theology about Israel a litmus test for protected speech or moral legitimacy.
What I'll say is that Natan Sharansky says there's three things that you shouldn't do with Israel. You shouldn't delegitimize it, you shouldn't demonize it, and you shouldn't apply a double standard. You can abide by those three things, you're not anti-Semitic.
This is Natan Sharansky, and this is what he said probably 20 years ago, and I still use this as my test. If what is being said is not demonization, not delegitimization, not double standards, then it's safe. If it's any of them or a combination of two or three of them, it is anti-Semitism. And guess what? It almost always falls in one of those three. Almost always. And what that lady was doing is she was basically accusing the U.S. government of being a slave of Israel, and you know that Israel was the puppet master using America and the dual loyalty and all those lies. And there's going to come a point where there's going to be more of this coming from the government. State-sponsored anti-Semitism, the best example is Nazi Germany. Okay, it didn't start that way, but it ended up that way, and it's a progression. And I fear that we're going in that direction. So the big question is, you know, when you think about all this, Conversion, expulsion, destruction, lethal progression, now what? Yesterday, I said a couple of times, some of you might remember, we need to have skin in the game. So what does that mean? Well, I'm so glad you remembered. Get skin in the game and make a difference today, starting today. Skin in the game. Skin spells out, I love acronyms when they work. Security, kingdom, gospel. No, we're not bringing the kingdom. Where's Andy? I want to make sure. Okay, good. We're not bringing the kingdom, Andy. We're waiting for the king to return for that. Yeah. But I'll explain. Security, kingdom, gospel, investment, nearness. Let me unpack this a little bit. First is security. We, as Christians, have an incredible opportunity to provide safety and security to our Jewish friends, and that is a mega bridge builder right now that could open some doors. So about a year and a half ago, we came up with this idea that we just launched called No Synagogue Left Behind. And what it is, it's on our website. You'll see, you'll see No Synagogue Left Behind, that little house logo. And, now listen, I'm going to go back there because I don't want you to read. If you're a pastor, pay attention. If you go to church and that church has a pastor, pay attention. If you know your pastor and you can talk to him, pay attention. If you don't, find somebody at your church who knows the pastor and talks to them. If you don't go to church, talk to Andy. He's got some words for you. This is what you do. The pastor identifies, and I'll put it on the screen. Identify the closest synagogue. This is you or, you know, anybody talking to a pastor. Identify the closest synagogue to your church. Identify the name of the rabbi and contact him, her. In some liberal synagogues, it might be a her, but that's not our issue right now. We just want to reach out to the Jewish people. Phone, email, letter, whatever works. Don't give up. Pastor, introduce yourself and your church, explain your security team's process, and offer to meet for coffee to introduce your team to the rabbi and maybe the synagogue's board. Okay? This only works in America because of the Second Amendment, obviously. If they accept to meet at their convenience and where they choose to meet. This is a powerful way to express your love for Israel and the Jewish people and your desire to bless them, Genesis 12:3, with security. Help them identify their needs and see how they can be met at no charge to them. We have tested this on the West Coast and on the East Coast with several churches. It works. Pastors called, one of those pastors is actually Brandon Oldhouse. Some of you might know who that is. I do a lot of work with Brandon. He's an incredible man of God. And call the rabbi, say, hey, we want to provide security. We meet on Sundays, but you meet on Friday and Saturday for Shabbat. We have a very good security team we'd like to bring and introduce. They went. They introduced the team. And they said, yeah, we could use you for the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. So they did that. Same on the East Coast. A pastor friend of mine did that. And I called the rabbi. The rabbi met with him. As a pastor, they talked about it. He provided security and they called him back and said, hey, we have an event for Rosh Hashanah. Can you bring some of your guys? And he did. And actually some of that synagogue ended up visiting his church because they were curious. Can you believe that? It's so simple. No synagogue left behind. So I'm talking to you right now. If you're a pastor, you have no excuse if you don't do it. Find a rabbi, and in some cases, like in Houston, there's more than one synagogue. Call them. What do you have to lose? You're offering a service free of charge, and you tell them, we do it because we love Israel. We read the Bible. We have to bless Israel. You'll be surprised. And if you're not a pastor, find one, talk to one, connect with one. It's that important. This is going to open doors. And guess what? Once you've established that relationship, after helping them once, twice, three times, a few times, then the pastor can go to the rabbi, have coffee with him and say, by the way, now that you know you can trust us, if your people ever are in trouble, we are a sanctuary. Just call us. This is where we are, people. No joke. This is where we are, and it's not going to get any better. This is our chance to be involved, not to be bystanders of the 21st century. I am counting on you. I talk to a large group like this, I'm encouraged. I'm counting on you. Please don't go home and forget about this. Do something about it. Next, the K, kingdom, gospel. Let's focus on the gospel so the kingdom can come. The word kingdom is there, Andy, because that's the only thing I could find that match K. Okay? So, no, I'm not New Apostolic Reformation. I'm not a Dominionist. No seven mountains. It fits the acronym. You know, sometimes you have to stretch a little bit. Okay. But the gospel, that's what I'm talking about. On our website, on the left, you have an example of the gospel from the Tanakh, from the Old Testament. Why? Because my people don't believe in the New Testament being inspired. So here is a gospel presentation from the Jewish scriptures. It's available for anybody who wants to click and get it. We also have developed a tract based on the same scriptures that we have in our office. And if you want us, we will send you some free of charge. Just email me at olivier@shalomandmessiah.com and say, Olivier, could you send me some tracts? Because I have some Jewish friends I want to give them to. Okay? We'll send them to you. Because we don't charge, please don't ask for 500 of them. We'll send you maybe a dozen, whatever you need, plus a few extras. But whatever you need, whenever you need, if you need them, don't be shy. The next thing I'm very excited about is the picture you see on the right. How many of you know who Pastor Tom Hughes is? Pastor Tom is a dear friend, and I went to his studio a few weeks ago, and we recorded 28 videos like this one, the difference between Jewishness and Judaism, in a conversation form where it's based on, it's basically all the questions that you can have, you might have about Jewish people, and how to reach Jewish people with the gospel, how to understand Jewish culture. And we did it in a conversational way that's not, an evangelism thing where a Jewish person finding it would go like, oh yeah, well, they're trying to convert me. It's just a conversation, but it's with the truth and it's answering questions. And so they're being post-produced right now and they will be on our website free of charge. You can send the link to anybody to learn. You can even send them to a Christian who wants to learn or to a Jew who's not saved. That's the purpose of them. And I'm already making a list of things we missed. So we're going to do a second set of recordings in the near future. But that will be called Towards Messiah. It's a big project that we're working on. It takes time. It takes resources. And we need your prayers and your support. But this is happening as we speak. Now, many of you have talked to some of them that you're here today, many of you have connected with us over the last few years and you've been donating to our ministry. And we tell you we go to Israel several times a year. And what do we do there? Well, here are some of the things that we do. That's the investments. That's the eye and skin in the game. Investments. We, on the left is and I know I can speak of them because I ask him on the left is a big control center of an organization called Moledet, which means homeland, and they installed cameras and sensors in the settlements where Jewish people live in big areas of land where they are really sometimes surrounded by some Arab villages that are building more to push the Jews outside of the Jewish Judea Samaria that is called the West Bank. So these guys have, they put sensors and cameras and I don't know if any of you ever watched the show A Person of Interest when they do facial recognition. They install the system where anybody who's not in the system, within 2 minutes they can have somebody on the location and they can have either the police, the army, or doctors to reach to wherever they are. It's an incredible organization. They are probably a year from receiving state funding because in Israel, they need to prove themselves for 2 years before the state would even look at them. And so we've been supporting their work in different ways. You see pictures on after that of vests. We supply the IDF, the reservists. This is where your money is going, friends. This is what we need your support. This is where your money is going to help the IDF defend themselves. We don't buy weapons. We don't do anything offensive, but vests to keep people safe, helmets, plates for the vest, drones, night goggle, night visions, because here is the simple principle. You cannot get them saved if they're not physically saved first. So we have to keep them alive so we can share the gospel. That's super important. So we have to, and we've been doing this for almost 2 years now, and it's opened some incredible doors. The little ATV vehicles on the right side, we bought two of those. Thank you. Many of you, you know, helped us with that. And they made them into little ambulances to go into the field, to bring supplies, to bring meds, and to sometimes even bring people back on those little ATVs. That's the I. That is a good way to invest kingdom money, isn't it? And I hope some of you will join us after you see these pictures, because we have so many more things that we need to do. The last one is the N, nearness. You need to be there. Now, not all of you. I invite you to come visit Israel. I mean, we've done it. I mean, you need to go there. But for us, we go there several times a year. We're near the people. We're with the people. I mean, I just couldn't help but notice that this young IDF soldier had a flag of Texas. He's not from Texas. He just loves Texas. I said, you know what? My kind of guy, you know? So I just couldn't help it. We went to a visit with a tank battalion. They were practicing in the Negev. So that's me on the tank. And I mean, it was incredible. And we've been there. We call it a ministry of presence. We're there when nobody else is there. We hold them. We hug them. We pray for them. They're not believers yet. That's what you have to start thinking that way. They're not believers yet. We keep going. This ministry of presence earns us the right to speak. How do I know? Look at the last picture. In the very back, against the window, it's me sharing with the IDF battalion after we had a barbecue at the house that we're renting in Upper Galilee. If you look at the clock on the right side, do you see the clock on the right side of the picture? Next to the clock is a pile of books. Those are Bibles in Hebrew, New Testament in Hebrew, that I distributed at the end of my conversation. I gave my testimony. I told them, this is why we do what we do, and I give all of them a New Testament in Hebrew. I read from some of it, and did they all take it home? No. Some did? Yes. I can't go on the street and say, here's a New Testament in Hebrew. They're going to go like, ah. But when you earn the right to speak, when you show your face like we do, when you bring supplies, when you're there when it's when nobody goes there, and you make a difference, then they listen. Because they go like, yeah, this guy he means it. He's with us. He comes with us. He brings stuff. He helps us with supplies. Well, you have to understand. How am I doing on time here? Oh, good. We have apparently another 45 minutes. The clock's not moving. The IDF, there's three levels, and the Air Force gets all the best stuff. You understand why. I mean, they're the power, you know, the power force in the armed forces. So they get all the best stuff. They get as much as they want. Then the army gets after them. They're number two. And the reservists, which are playing a big part right now. Without the reservists, they'd be in trouble. The reservists get the crumbs. Sometimes they don't even have enough. Sometimes they don't have a helmet that will fit, or night vision goggles that will outfit their helmet so they can go at night with that little ambulance to bring and take stuff back without being spotted. All those things play a part, and that's where we come in, and that's where you come in. That is why, friends, I'm not going to be shy. We need you. We need you to help our ministry make a bigger difference in Israel. You know what to do in America. You figure out how to connect your pastor, or you're a pastor yourself, connect with the rabbi and say, we want to provide security, no synagogue left behind. You help us move supplies to Israel. You have my word as a believer that we will never buy weapons. That's not what we do, but we want to keep them alive. So we have a chance to earn the right to speak. And then when we have the right to speak, we can tell them about Yeshua, which is what I did in that living room. And it's changing things. So just want to remind you, I'm not going to read it, but it's the sheep and the goat from Matthew 25, 31 through 46. We've talked about it yesterday. Andy spoke of it as well this morning. We do not want to be a goat. We want to be a sheep. Now, this is not us, because this is during the tribulation. I get it. But again, I'm pulling the principle from this action of benevolence towards the Jews so that we can show today that we already are sheep of the great shepherd and we want to bless the Jews according to Genesis 12:3. Does that make sense? So that's what we do. We need compassion, courage, and commitment. Compassion, courage, and commitment. Let me leave you with this little short 2-minute movie.
Was ist das?
Ich habe noch nie eins so nah gesehen.
Wohin denn schön?
Verschwinde!
Es tut mir leid.
Passion, courage, commitment. This is where we are. This QR code right here will get you the packet you see on the screen. If you signed up yesterday, you already are going to receive it. If you did not sign up yesterday, today is your chance. Even if you don't sign up, you can talk to the rabbi. And even if you don't sign up, you can talk to your Jewish friends. We desperately need you to join Shalom and Messiah. The remnant church, the true Bible-believing Christians, we are diminishing. We are becoming a rarity. Those who support and love Israel are becoming few and far in between. I'm looking at a group here. You are the new righteous among the nations. I know you're going to help us make a difference. Thank you for listening.